It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Rock County in southern Wisconsin has one of the highest domestic violence rates in the state. But last month, law enforcement, the courts, and advocates came together to enact new rules and procedures designed to further protect domestic violence survivors.
The new rules created by the Domestic Violence Workgroup extend no contact orders and ensure survivors have a say in the conditions of those orders that go beyond the minimum rules required by the state.
The rule changes were approved by a vote held by Rock County judges and are already in effect.
Two members of the workgroup that created the policy changes join us now. Kelsey Hood Christensen is president and CEO of Family Services of Southern Wisconsin, and Jason Sanders is the Rock County District Attorney. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Jason, let's start with you and this working group. Give us the basics of this group and how it came together to put these changes into practice.
The working group is part of our CJCC. That's a Criminal Justice Coordinating Council. So it already existed. It had been existing for a couple of years and did a pretty significant report about 3 years ago. But within the last year, we've really picked up a great deal of steam, starting with some questions from law enforcement about how 72-hour no contacts worked, and then leading to this mass effort from all sorts of stakeholders to try to institute some real changes to improve outcomes for domestic violence victims in our communities.
Kelsey, a lot of communities have working groups like this. I get the sense from hearing about the work you're doing here that this is a different kind of working group. There's a lot more going on here that makes this unique and distinctive. What's going on there?
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible group. A lot of different communities have different multidisciplinary teams focusing on domestic violence, sexual assault, child abuse. What makes this group really special, I think, is one, who this group comprises of. We have community-based advocates like myself, to the district attorney, to law enforcement, to a variety of different sectors who really are focused on improving outcomes for survivors. But also, I think what makes us different is how policy-focused we are. So a lot of MDTs focus on case review and looking at specific cases, but we really have taken like a systems-based and policy approach to see how we can make things flow and function a lot better for survivors. So it's been a pretty powerful outcomes.
Jason, I've heard in other communities around the state a feeling that people are in silos, right? There's the advocates over here, the police over there, the DA over here. As a district attorney, why is it important for you to be in this direct coordination, cooperation with all these different stakeholders?
First of all, because without it, no real change can happen. That everybody who lives in our silos, we have difficult jobs. There's too many people running through the justice system and not enough funding to really properly move it as quickly as everybody would like. So it's exceptionally easy to just worry about the next task ahead of you. Only by getting people together in the same room can you start to kind of brainstorm what could be and what could be improved. But then secondly, without having the stakeholders buying into the process and having some real ownership in creating, then you're not going to have the, I guess, political capital, for lack of a better term, like the will to effectuate real change. In order to get some of our changes through, for example, we needed to have the buy-in of the Rock County Law Enforcement Association. That's all the chiefs and the sheriffs. And if this policy were created without multiple law enforcement officers in the room, they might not want to say yes to it. Similarly, we needed our judges to pass a local rule, which is, it's kind of a whole thing, let's just say that. And the fact that there was a judge and a court commissioner on this group meant that there was real buy-in from the jump to be able to make that happen.
Kelsey, before we get into the specific rule changes here, can you give us a picture of how serious a problem domestic violence is in Rock County?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like many communities, there's no singular place where we are looking at domestic violence across the entire community. All of us are looking at how we intersect with domestic violence and how many survivors we serve. Just kind of a glimpse into various different areas. So I believe it was last year, the Rock County courts had over 140 cases related to domestic violence, which was a pretty significant portion. And national estimates, only 50% of survivors, up to 50% of survivors report. So we know that that's not capturing all survivors. Looking at our local housing coalition, our community had 91 households that identified as experiencing domestic violence on wait lists for different housing programs. And of course, specific to our services at Family Services, we had 1,300 service hours to just under 100 individuals who are domestic violence survivors, but we also extended that to almost 3,000 hotline calls and 31,000 bed nights through our housing program to domestic violence survivors.
Now, Jason, we have these rule changes here. Let's dig into them now. Let's start with the 72-hour no-contact rule. First of all, explain, please, what was the previous standard? What did it mean?
All right. So in every county in Wisconsin, the law says that a domestic violence victim can enforce a 72-hour no-contact. So if there's a call for, you know, a fight in the home on a Friday night, if the victim enforces that 72 hours, then that means the offender cannot go back to the house. If the offender is going to jail, then on Monday, a judge will release that person with some sort of bond wherein there will be conditions of release that say, hey, you can't have any contact with this person, or, you know, you can only have contact via text message, something like that. The problem is that mostly people who don't commit felonies don't spend the whole weekend in jail. So there are a lot of situations, and this is currently what's happening in most counties in Wisconsin, where somebody's arrested for misdemeanor domestic battery on a Friday, and then they get a court date for 4 weeks from now. And then the victim enforces the 72-hour no contact, but then after, you know, hour 73, there's nothing protecting the victim at all. The offender can just move right home. And sometimes people can have the forethought or the savvy to either, you know, figure it out for themselves or to contact, you know, an organization like Kelsey's and try to get help with the restraining order. But even then, that's not going to happen by Monday morning. So what we have done here in Rock County is extend whenever there's violent domestic violence, like not just a disorderly conduct, and the victim enforces the 72 hours, that no contact is in place until the first court date. We're also trying to move up that first court date so that things can escalate more quickly to get to what I'm guessing is the second thing you're going to want to talk about here, that other shift in policy. But essentially, this should at bare minimum provide a recourse. If the offender shows back up 4 days later, you know, coming home from the bars, even though there's a no contact in place, calling police is no longer an investigation. It is a straightforward, this person is violating their bond and they're going to jail now.
Kelsey, before we move on to the other part of this that Jason mentioned, just this that particular change, what happens after that 72 hours, how could that change the experience of a survivor now that this is in place in Rock County?
Yeah, we think that that is one of many incredible pieces about these changes. Frequently in the past, we would have survivors kind of scrambling and carrying a lot of that responsibility and that burden to obtain those civil restraining orders. And some will reach out to advocacy agencies who try to help navigate that. Others may try to navigate that system independently, but it is kind of a scramble because you know that clock is ticking on that 72 hours, especially in circumstances like Jason said, where it's a late Friday or whatever that looks like. So the ability to extend that just carries forward the safety aspect without putting additional responsibilities on the survivor.
We are talking about domestic violence policies, changes in Rock County in addition to what's required by the state. Kelsey Hood Christensen is with us, president and CEO of Family Services of Southern Wisconsin, and District Attorney Jason Sanders, both with us. They're both members of the Rock County Domestic Violence Work Group. Jason, you foreshadowed now that 72-hour rule, that changes in Rock County, but also the conditions of no contact. And this is really interesting. Explain what has changed here and why.
Well, the gist is that we're trying to get a smarter no contact, something that's more sustainable. Your listeners right now, they don't do what I do for a living. They don't know how bond condition works. So just in general, bond conditions tend to be a lot like a light switch. Yes, contact or no contact. So historically, we've had a lot of situations wherein the victim says, you know, I want no contact. And the judge says, okay, no contact. But then 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 6 weeks down the road, there's just a hole. There's something that doesn't work for their lives, right? I can't do my job and also pick up the kids because that's what my partner used to do. When you want the specifics of that, there are so many different examples, it's impossible to say. Mm-hmm. But the nutshell takeaway of it is that there are a lot of circumstances where somebody finds light switch off, no contact. to be completely unsustainable. So they choose the other option, which is light switch on all the contact. And in some circumstances, that can work out okay, but there are a lot of circumstances where somebody comes in and then they waive that no contact, the bond condition gets changed, and we got 2 or 3 weeks before the police are getting called again. So instead, we have worked together to create this form. It's supposed to be relatively flexible and something that it can be filled out on scene with law enforcement on the day you call police. Do you want to have contact, but only by phone, or in-person contact, but only for exchanging kids, or they can be at home, but only if they're sober, et cetera, to give the victim more input into, A, ownership of the process, like there's an empowerment component, but B, just tell us and we will tell the judge, this is a kind of no contact that will work. This is a limited contact that is safe and sustainable. As far as I know, we're the first county in Wisconsin to try this, but so far we've had a couple of them come through and it seems like it's working pretty well. Only been a month so far, though.
Yeah, Kelsey, as someone who works with domestic violence survivors, what are your hopes for how that kind of flexibility in the no contact rule is going to work?
Yeah, I think this change that allows for more voice and choice and flexibility with a survivor-driven method is going to be a significant benefit. And our first hopes for this is that, one, the survivors will feel more informed and empowered throughout the criminal justice process, and so that they have the ability and have a voice in this process to dictate what those different no contact guidelines are. I think that's going to be really powerful, even just starting with the process of having those conversation with that first contact with law enforcement. So I think that's going to be huge. The criminal justice system is big and overwhelming and scary to most of us who are not involved in it daily. So building in those spots where we have those conversation points and we get more feedback is going to be incredible. I also hope that it allows our survivors to obtain safety while still being able to maintain their lifestyle. So Jason gave a number of examples of, you know, co-parenting with somebody or just sharing your life. Like, this is a huge change for somebody who is moving forward and trying to move away from that abusive relationship. And so if we don't strip away all the resources that could potentially be helpful by maintaining some contact, this will set them off on a better foot to start to keep rebuilding while still having transportation back and forth from kids' events, childcare while they're working, whatever it needs that limited contact is still there for.
Now, Jason, the person who's the subject of this no contact order, it's someone who's been arrested, maybe charged, at some point charged with domestic violence, but not convicted yet. Are there things that have to be in place to protect their rights, given that they haven't been convicted, or at least not yet in this process?
Yes, absolutely. So the bond only exists while the case is open, which means that everybody has been arrested and charged with a crime. Probable cause exists, but they haven't been found guilty yet. So none of this is meant to be punitive. It exists to prevent future violence and also to give the defendant an opportunity to kind of establish, how do I put this, that there's something else to them, right? Like, if the only thing a judge knows about you is the police report or the testimony about one of the worst days of your life, well, then they're probably going to have a pretty negative impression about who you are. So people who are arrested for something can be on bond for 6 months, 10 months, 15 months, depending on how busy the court calendar is. And that 15 months of successful co-parenting, staying out of trouble, being pro-social, going to work, helping out with your church fundraiser, whatever, it helps prove for the defendant that they are somebody who doesn't need to be sent off to jail or prison necessarily. They needed a course correction in their life. Now, there are plenty of folks who can't prove that. But anyway, the point of the bond is to provide a safe mechanism for everybody. Now, obviously, we're geared more towards victims slash survivors with the point of this, but more than one defendant has found himself or herself in a situation where, you know, it says all the way no contact, but then the victim calls and says, I need your help, come home. And then he comes home and then there's a fight and then the police get called and then he finds himself in way more trouble than he was in to begin with. So ideally, this should protect everybody right up until the point of conviction, at which point then, you know, that's up to the judge and sometimes the good people at probation.
Now, these are significant changes. I understand you've mentioned this is an ambitious working group. Kelsey, what do you see next? What kind of things do you have your eye on for the future?
Currently, we're looking to get a kind of a resource portal or website set up for survivors, which I think is really interesting. There's a number of different agency or system specific websites that talk about resources or resources that are available to survivors specific to what that agency can provide. But we're looking at having one that's more holistic, that's general information, and I think is going to be really powerful for allowing survivors to kind of determine what's going to be their next best route if they're interested in reaching out for more support, but also general information and things. The community-based advocates with Family Services and also our other advocacy agency, the YWCA, is working with our victim witness to establish office hours for assisting with restraining orders so that you don't feel like you have to go to the advocacy agency. You don't have to sign up for services, but at least you have somebody to kind of wade through the legal paperwork and feel more confident in your ability to submit that independently. And then DA Sanders, I'll pass that over to you to talk about kind of the other project as it's a bit more technical.
Sure. The thing we are currently working on, it's a new technological breakthrough, in my opinion, wherein right now when somebody is on pretrial release, sometimes the judge will order them to wear a GPS locator. And that can be in part to help keep them away from places where we'd expect them to find their victims or somebody for whom they have no contact. So the new system involves a pretty generic smartphone to be given to the victim. And in a circumstance of all the way no in-person contact, then the phone will alert when a defendant's GPS is within a certain range of them. Like you'll get a quick little message light up if they're within 300 feet. And if they get within, say, 100 feet, now all of a sudden there starts being panic alarms and a little GPS map that shows you, you know, an exit route from where you are right now. And if they get within 15 or so feet, all of a sudden the thing starts flashing like a little siren, and it also starts recording in case there's, you know, a need to have evidence of what's about to happen to you. We don't have that up and running yet, but it is right on the horizon. I'm pretty excited about it. And I think it's a thing we're going to be able to roll out sometime, probably by summer, most likely.
Finally, I'm going to guess, you mentioned this is not in place in almost every county in the state. The things we've been talking about today, I got to think there are people in other counties looking to Rock County saying, huh, what's going on there? Jason, as a DA, have you gotten contact or interest from people around the state on what you guys are working on?
Yes, but not a great deal as of yet. I think that's part of the reason Kelsey and I both agreed to come on today is that I think that this is a hole. I've had a couple conversations with a few other DAs, and I'm really optimistic that by the community engagement that we're seeing and by the people wanting to know more about what this is and how it works, that perhaps we can end up with this being something of a pilot or other people coming up with their own ideas, because ultimately, this is a problem everywhere. There is not a community that does not have any domestic violence. So whatever it is that can be done to kind of fill in this hole and to improve our outcomes for our survivors, we need to try to do it.
And we'll leave it there. Jason, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Kelsey, thanks for being with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Kelsey Hood Christensen is president and CEO of Family Services of Southern Wisconsin. Jason Sanders is the Rock County District Attorney. They're both members of the Rock County Domestic Violence Work Group.